So will your insurance policy cover baby if baby drives your car? We might get an answer to that question during this special car insurance and car financing edition of On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Financial planner Kevin McKinley is off today, but we have with us two guests from Consumer Reports who know a lot about shopping around to find the best deals when it comes to car insurance and car financing. And we will talk about how to get the best rates, how to find the best policy, all sorts of questions related to car insurance and financing that automobile purchase. And we welcome your questions and maybe even your own situations. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Now, we are not doing specific car model recommendations during this hour. We'll do another show on that some other time. But we wanted to get into the money issues when it comes to car insurance and car financing. Let me welcome our two guests for this special edition of On Your Money. Very happy to have with us Toby Stanger, a senior editor at Consumer Reports. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Tony Georgia Annie, who is an associate finance editor for Consumer Reports. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Joy.
It's good to have you both with us. And if I understand this correctly, Toby, you specialize a bit in the insurance business or the insurance area, and Tony, you're more the financing area.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, well, good. Well, we're happy to have you both with us on this. Toby, what are some things that we should consider as we are figuring out who we want to insure our vehicles?
Well, the most important thing is to remember that it's really important to shop frequently, every couple years, because in spite of what you might think about loyalty, benefits that you get for being with your insurer, we find that those loyalty benefits are not necessarily so great. It depends on the insurer. But it really does pay to shop every 2 or 3 years for auto insurance. We have an example in our article of in Consumer Reports in our March edition of a woman from New York, close to actually where our offices are, and she had been a customer of GEICO for more than 20 years. She did a little calling, and she saved almost $800 on auto insurance and $390 on homeowner's insurance by moving to a different company, to Amica. And that's just by making a few calls. I've heard story after story. People in the office come up to me and said, I tried that, and guess what happened? So it doesn't hurt.
No, it doesn't. And when you see a commercial, like a GEICO commercial, not that there's anything wrong with that, it will make you believe that that's the cheapest one out there because of, they keep on saying that you'll get the best deal through them, but it's not necessarily the case.
Right, but it could be. I mean, it depends on your situation. You know, people's situations change. As we show in the article, there are many times in your life when there can be life events that can have an impact on your coverage, either up or down. And companies themselves may change their rating, may change their underwriting, which could have an impact on the prices they charge for an individual customer. It's very individualized with auto insurance. So that's why it's, just knowing what you're paying now might not be the best thing, might not be the best place to have coverage in a couple of years.
Yeah, it makes some sense. So I have had the same insurance policy for some time now. You recommend every couple of years at least to see maybe if you can get a better one?
Yeah, I mean, it can't hurt. The other thing, it's not that hard to do. There are websites. You just plug in a little bit of information. You're not going to have to give them your social security number. It's not that kind of thing. But you can shop around online and see what quotes they give you. In the article, we mentioned, for example, there's several different websites that do this. There's a company online called TheZebra.com, and they have estimates typically from 18 to 35 insurers, and that depends on where you live and your situation. But that's a lot of choices to look at, and we do recommend that you compare a lot of different policies.
And we have put that that article up on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, and we will get into more details in a moment. But I'm wondering, Tony, bringing you into the conversation, it's kind of the same way with car financing, that we don't necessarily just have to go with our bank or the dealer, that we can kind of shop around to get the best deal?
Yeah, absolutely. If you shop around, you can really save a lot. You know, just looking at it this morning, Bankrate.com showing that a average loan for 60 months for a car is up around 4.3 to 4.5%. Yet, in 2 seconds, I was able to find a car loan for the same 60 months at just 2.24%. So a quick little search with the web can save you a lot of money when you're looking to get a car loan.
So that is one of the sites you can use. What was that site to?
Yes. Bankrate.com is one of them. And if you just put average car loan rate into a web search, you'll find a lot of sources, and you'll also find a lot of offers out there of all kinds of rates. One thing to keep in mind, of course, whether you'll get that lowest rate is going to depend upon your credit score and how well you pay your bills. But in any case, no matter what level you're at, doing a little shopping around can save you a lot of money.
Yeah. You know, sometimes I see these deals advertised on television, for example, that will be, for sake of discussion, a Toyota. And if you buy a brand new Toyota right now during this month, we'll give you 0% financing through the dealership. Is that usually a good deal or not?
Well, in many cases, those are through a manufacturer. It's better if it's through a manufacturer. It depends on the particular offer. In many cases, you're getting your choice of low interest financing and or perhaps a rebate. Sometimes you get both, but in many cases it's a choice. So you have to weigh the benefit of the low interest compared to taking the rebate. Many times what we find is that it's better to take the rebate and then go find low interest somewhere else. You know, do a web search, find the lowest interest you could find from an independent finance company, and also take the $1,000 rebate, and generally you'll do better that way.
We are talking with two guests from Consumer Reports about the money associated with buying and financing and insuring a car. And we welcome your questions for them at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We have a number of callers and emails. We have Jane, who emails, "My 17-year-old daughter got her license last summer. Shortly after that, she bought her own truck and began paying her own auto insurance, piggybacking on her father's policy. Shortly after that, she turned 18. Since she got her driver's license, my auto insurance premium has gone up $35 a month. My daughter only lives with me half-time. I questioned my insurance company about that, and they said that it is their standard, even though she has her own car and she has her own insurance policy. Can you tell me if this is really standard procedure for auto insurance when your child gets a license for a car and becomes an adult?" Well, I don't. Toby, do you have any thoughts on that? Should Jane be upset that her insurance rates went up because her daughter, who's 18, got her license and is driving?
You know, this is an unusual situation in that she says that the daughter only lives with her half the time. It sounds to me like what they, I can't be certain, but what the insurance companies are always going to charge you more if you've got a kid living in the house, who could potentially be a driver of your car, even if she has her own car that she's insuring. So, but I think the issue here is, you know, the child isn't with her all the time, and why is the insurance company penalizing her? As I said, I think probably what the insurance company is they're probably making a case that, okay, yeah, she has her own car, she has her own policy, but there is the potential that she will be driving one of the cars in your household at some point. You're borrowing the car. So that's my guess.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's standard, but $35... In the great, it sounds bad, but you know, we have found huge increases for people's policies when a teen driver is added. So $35 may sound like a lot, but it's not as bad as it could be.
Yeah, I was going to say you mentioned about how your insurance rates can change with various milestones. One of those milestones is turning 25, isn't it? I always heard that you're going to get socked if you're a teen or a very young adult. But once you turn 25, they decide you're responsible and your rates go down?
Well, they start to go down, but they're still pretty high at 25. I would say about age 30 is when you really start to, when things really start to even out. What's interesting, though, is that if you have a college degree, that actually can lower your premium. So you can be, just getting a college degree, and you don't have to be 25, obviously, can make a difference. They actually, the auto insurance companies, consider more education better. And we found that college grads, on average, save about $90 per year compared with those who never finished high school. You get a little bit more for a master's degree and a PhD, but not very much. But it's just kind of interesting that they consider those things, which really have nothing to do with your driving record.
No, I wouldn't think so. But they must, for some reason, decide that you're not going to be, speeding, or that you're somehow more responsible if you have that college degree, even though you can still be a bad driver, right?
I guess so. I mean, the insurance companies create all sorts of correlations, some of which we think are really patently unfair. One of them is that having a poor credit score can have a big impact on your auto insurance rates. In fact, having a poor credit score costs you more than having two DWIs, two driving under the influence. Even though the DWI clearly has a lot more to do with actual driving experience, and the poor credit doesn't. But the auto insurance companies have made the determination that they think there's a correlation between poor credit and bad driving, or they just feel that they can charge more. There are several states where they're not allowed to do that, but Wisconsin is a state where they're allowed to make that correlation.
We are talking about automobile insurance and financing and other issues, money issues related to the purchase of a vehicle. The only area we're not going into during this special edition of On Your Money is specific model recommendations for cars. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Toby Stanger is a senior editor at Consumer Reports, and Tony Georgiani is a associate finance editor for Consumer Reports. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We're talking about cars during On Your Money, but not specific car models. Instead, we're talking about shopping around to get a decent car insurance policy, talking about getting good car financing. We'll talk some about are those extended warranties worth the money? and other other things that we should consider when purchasing a car. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We're talking with two experts from Consumer Reports. And let's take some calls. We have Judy in Milwaukee with us. Hi, Judy.
Good morning.
Good morning. Go ahead with your question.
Here's my comment. Several of my family members and I have gone for the lower insurance, and two of them specifically, when they needed their insurance, were told, this isn't part of your coverage. So my comment is, as always, you get what you pay for. So pushing for the lowest, which is kind of what I'm hearing from your guests, may leave you where you have to go out and pay your own attorney fees for things. One specifically, there was a hit and run. My daughter was injured, and confirmed by the police, she got the license number. They were cited, and the insurance company said, no, if you want to get those medical bills paid for, you have to do it yourself. So wondering, when would they think about that?
Well, that doesn't sound very fair. But how about you get what you paid for, Toby, and cheaper isn't always best?
Well, it's complicated. So there's a lot of different kinds of coverage, and there are two kinds of coverage, that personal injury protection and medical payments protection, cover the medical payments, covers the medical payments of you and your passengers, if they're injured in a car crash, and personal injury protection does some of the similar things, but it can also cover lost wages. The problem is that and these coverages can also cover people, you know, pedestrians. The problem is that they're not always required. And so somebody who wants to save on auto insurance might say, you know, I've got my own health insurance, and that's, you know, I'm going to just go without this. They do, and then if they strike a pedestrian, that pedestrian has no recourse. So it's a difficult thing. For the individual, it may be better to financially not to include or to get the minimum coverage, but for the good of society, it's better that they have more coverage. What we generally recommend is that you get enough liability coverage for your vehicle, and we recommend 100, 300, 100, which is 100 for bodily injury, and that's for, you know, if you're sued and you need to, you know, pay somebody's bills. 100 for 300 per accident, and property damage up to $100,000. So we recommend that's a fairly high amount of coverage, but you know, you can't force somebody to pay if it's not a requirement that you get these other kinds of coverages. You know, you can't force them. You know, they can just pay the minimum liability and not get these other kinds of insurance, and you can't force them into it.
Yeah, I will say here's an example that I have followed, and I know others have as well. I have had junker vehicles, but I've had them for a very long time, and they're, you know, nearly 20 years old, and I drop collision insurance, so I'm not paying for something. I'm not gonna, if this car gets banged up, I'm not gonna worry about it, so I don't pay for that collision insurance. Is that a wise thing or not?
Yeah, sure. I've done that myself. You know, the car gets to be a certain age, and it's you know, it's not worth it to keep collision. In fact, we find that even not dropping it, but even just raising the deductible can make a big difference in terms of what you pay. If you raise the collision coverage from 500 to 1,000, you can save on average about $140 a year, and most people don't put in a claim for auto insurance. You know, it's 5 to 10 years on average. So if you have a claim within 5 years, you know, after 5 years or within 5 years, and you've saved $141, or you know, over that period, you're still going to be better off, even if you have to pay the higher
deductible. So, yes, raising the deductible, getting rid of collision when the car is aged significantly is worthwhile.
Yeah. You know, there is one consideration there, though, when you make that decision. There's collision coverage, and there's also comprehensive coverage. And your comprehensive coverage covers damage to your vehicle from non-collision events, except, believe it or not, usually collision with an animal. So you might want to drop collision, but think about saving comprehensive, which usually is very inexpensive. It'll cover things like a tree hitting your car, or and that may be where your glass coverage is, and again, collision with an animal. So make that determination separately, because you may find that comprehensive coverage is really inexpensive, so you might keep that and drop the collision portion.
Yeah, I agree exactly with Tony. In fact, we found that raising the comprehensive coverage from $500 to $1,000 only saves you about $55 a year on average. So there's not that much benefit to raising the deductible, and also there is more of a benefit to holding on to it. It also, it's funny, comprehensive coverage pays also for, you know, if your car's stolen, and if it's flood damaged, which you know, it's not the same thing as with homeowner's insurance, where your homeowner's insurance does not cover you for flood, unless it's something like a pipe bursting inside. So there's a lot that comprehensive coverage can do for you, and it's worth keeping often.
We are talking about all things automobile related when it comes to our money, including insurance and financing. And we'll talk about some other add-ons that can happen when you are at the car dealership. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Tony, I wanted to ask you about when we're buying a car, and you know, maybe we've decided on the financing, but then we're asked if we want to extend the warranty on a car. Generally, are those worth it or not?
Generally not. First of all, those really aren't warranties at all. They call them warranties sometimes, but generally they're service contracts. You're essentially paying up front in anticipation that something is going to go wrong with your car and that they'll cover it, whoever it is. It may be provided by the manufacturer, or it may be a third party. Third party coverage is a particular problem, because many times you'll find out that when you go to make a claim under these policies, you have to prove that you properly maintain the vehicle, or you may be told that whatever is covered was a pre-existing condition, or it simply may not be covered under the fine print. Our advice is to self-insure. Take the money that you would spend on one of these plans, and it can be in the thousands of dollars, certainly hundreds, and put it into an account, a dedicated product replacement and repair fund. That way, if something happens, you'll have the money. On the other hand, if there's a bigger priority in your life, maybe you lose your job or there's some type of other emergency, you'll have that money to use for a much more important purpose. I will tell you one thing. If you lose your job and you buy one of these plans and you say to the company, I need the money back because I can't pay my mortgage or my rent, they're not going to give it back to you. So obviously. Yeah. So we really say, put the money aside, self-insure. And you know what? If you never have a major repair, then you can use that money to buy a new car when the time comes. Of course, what you want to do is buy a reliable vehicle and maintain it exactly how the manufacturer recommends. Then you'll reduce the chances that you'll need a major repair.
Cole in Madison is with us. Hi, Cole.
Hi. I have a question about loans. I going on 2 years now, I have had my car, unfortunately, hit and totaled and had to buy a new car each time. This last summer, when I purchased a replacement vehicle, I had to go use and had to take out an auto loan, where in the past I was able to just use the total value of my car to purchase it outright with cash. So what I'm wondering is, because this is a used car and I'm finding that it doesn't seem to be as reliable as I was hoping, I'd like to look at replacing this car sooner than later, not waiting until something goes wrong. But with an auto loan attached to it and several thousand dollars left, what are my options for finding a new car, and can I roll that loan into a new car with a new loan, or how does that work?
You know, that is a really tough question, and it really goes to our advice to try to avoid really long-term loans, because when you get into a situation like that, you certainly have the option, and dealers will be very happy to roll that loan into another vehicle. But then what winds up happening is that you're paying off two vehicles. You're paying off two loans, and you keep yourself in a situation where you'll notice that your bank account is always empty. You know, sometimes if you're in a really difficult situation, as you're describing, where you're sort of left with no other choice, you may have to go for it. But the main thing, again, is when you're buying cars, to make sure you, especially if they use vehicles, that you have them checked out thoroughly, you maintain them properly, and that you try to stick with loans that are relatively short. We usually say 48 months or less, which is probably going to shock a lot of people who are listening, because the average loan now is up around more than 60 months. So you could do that. You could roll it in. But if you could try to hold on and pay off that loan first, it would be so much better. Otherwise, you really just keep yourself broke rolling the old loan in with the new one.
Yeah. So the shorter, you recommend 48 months because then you're paying less in interest?
It's not only less in interest, but what happens is cars lose value as you drive them, particularly new cars. They lose value quickly, and they will lose value, particularly in the initial stages, more quickly than you're paying off the loan. If something happens where you need to replace that car, again, maybe it's just a bad car, or maybe it's stolen or damaged, now you're stuck in a situation where you actually owe more on the vehicle than it's worth. If you have an insurance payment because the car is damaged or lost, now you're going to find out that the insurance payment doesn't cover what you still owe on the loan, and you wind up exactly in that situation where you're having to roll the old loan into the new loan. So that's what's called being upside down on a loan, and you want to try to avoid that as much as possible. Another way to beat that scenario is to put down as much as you can when buying that car. We say, and again, your people listening are going to cringe, but we say 20%. Put down at least 20%. Keep that loan below 48 months.
Yeah. I'm wondering what you think about if you have the option of paying in cash, even though it might strap you a little bit, or taking out a loan with interest rates not all that high right now. I mean, do you think that paying in all cash is the way to go if you can swing it?
It's always the way to go. You know, 25 years ago, I bought my 92 Ford Explorer. I paid it with cash. I know everybody, again, is saying, who's this guy? But I paid it with cash. I've kept that car maintained brand new. And I've still got the thing, and that car is costing me nothing now. I maintain it, paint it. It's like a brand new 25-year-old Ford Explorer. Got rid of the collision. Kept the comprehensive, which costs you about $25 a year. And I am sitting pretty. I'm throwing money in the bank instead of into a car loan or into a new vehicle.
Love it. You know, I wanted to, Toby, ask you a little bit about, and Cole, thank you for the call. He's dropped off now, but boy, two accidents that totaled his car. I'm assuming it was someone else's fault. That's going to affect his insurance rates, even if it wasn't his fault?
Yeah, not at fault accidents do have an impact, believe it or not. I mean, we have a chart in our article in the March issue of Consumer Reports, and it shows that having two not at fault accidents on average, and this is based on crunching auto insurance premiums, more than 2 billion auto insurance premiums that we got from a database. So this is on a nationwide basis. It's not necessarily going to be for an individual, but on average, $465 more that someone could be paying on their auto insurance policy for two not at fault accidents. You know, they unfortunately, you know, if you're a Calamity Jane or a Calamity John, the auto insurance companies take note, and they may, you know, they may penalize you.
Yeah, I mean, boy, and you'd think, can we have a tantrum somewhere to change that?
Well, the tantrum is you say, you know what, I'm taking my business elsewhere, and then you shop around. I did want to mention one thing, Joy. You were talking about we're not giving car recommendations, which is true, but we do mention in our article that which car you buy can have an impact on the rates that you pay, it can be significant.
So if I buy a Corvette, I'm going to pay more than if I buy a Volvo or something.
Well, right. So a Chevy Corvette, in fact, on average, you'll spend about $440 more annually for auto insurance than you would spend if you got a Toyota Camry LE, and we're talking about new cars. What's interesting is buying a Honda Odyssey, you know, one of those big vans, that will save you $145 a year over the Camry. And I'm not certain whether that's because
you're a soccer mom or something. I don't know.
It could be. You know, it's based on the experience of people who drive those cars. So it could be a combination of safety features, but also of the kinds of accidents that people who drive those cars have.
Very neat. You know, and Cole did call back because he wanted to assure us that his insurance rates did not go up from the accidents. And so,
oh, okay.
Good for him. I mean,
yeah.
But the year is young. No, I'm just kidding, Cole. We're going to take a short break, and then we have many other callers who have questions about car financing or car insurance or other issues when it comes to buying a car. And I only said we're not talking about car recommendations when it comes to our guests are not going to give you the latest ratings of different models for, you know, reliability and that sort of thing. But as Toby just mentioned, the type of car you drive does impact your insurance rates. So when it comes to that, we can do it. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We are talking about all things related to car financing and insurance with our two guests from Consumer Reports, Toby Stanger, senior editor at Consumer Reports, and Tony Giorgiani, who is an associate finance editor for Consumer Reports. This is the Ideas Network. All right, so are you in love with your car? Well, you probably aren't in love with your insurance rates or the money aspects of it, but we're sorting all that out with our two guests from Consumer Reports, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org if you have a question about car financing or car insurance rates or shopping for the best deal when it comes to car insurance and financing. This is a special edition of On Your Money. As Kevin McKinley is off today, he will be back next week. Let's go back to the phones. Matt is with us now in Cary. Hi, Matt.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. What is your question?
Well, my question's in regards to high mileage leases. I drive somewhere between 20 and 30,000 miles a year, and I get reimbursed monthly for my automobile, and I currently drive a 2011. Well, I got a note stating that, you know, my reimbursement is contingent on my auto being within 4 years of new. So I would technically lose out on some money, but I was looking at getting a new car anyway. And so I just was starting to look at different options, and I thought high mileage leases were an interesting option that I never considered, and so I wanted to get your opinion on those.
Tony?
Well, unless there is some particular reason why you must turn to a lease generally is going to cost you much more than taking out a loan. It's really complicated, but it has to do with the fact that whether you're leasing a vehicle, say a $40,000 vehicle, or you're buying it, you're borrowing $40,000. With a lease, you're paying back only the depreciation, the loss in value. And what happens is, and this is complicated, but you're being charged interest on everything you borrow except for what you pay back. Since you're paying back less with a lease, you're being charged more interest month after month after month. There's a greater balance that's subject to a finance charge. Lessees just don't know that. The other problem with a lease is that it puts you on a roller coaster to get a new car every few years when the depreciation, the loss in value is really great. So you're constantly getting hammered with this loss in value. Now, in your particular case, if you're required to get a new car every few years, it's a different issue, and it requires a different set of calculations. But generally, for most people, it's much better to get a car with a loan or, as we spoke earlier, to pay cash. But leasing generally turns out to be a much more expensive way to obtain a vehicle in order of thousands of dollars. But if you are going to lease or if you must lease, certainly setting the mileage ahead is important. So if you know that you're going to be driving a large number of miles, you need to factor that in early on, because what will happen is if you drive more miles than the lease allows, you're going to be stuck with a penalty at the end unless you somehow are able to negotiate that away by leasing yet again. So in your case, it's a little bit complicated if you're required to keep getting a new vehicle, but again, that's a very expensive way to obtain transportation.
Thanks, Matt. Rochelle in Montello is with us now. Hi, Rochelle.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I wanted to run something past your guest. For the first time, I am going through an insurance agent. I'm recently married, and now we are combining insurances. And something very interesting that I would not have thought of is she ran quotes based on having either my husband as the primary or as me as the primary. And the difference was by hundreds of dollars. We're going to save about $300 by having him as the primary versus me.
What's the deal with that?
Yeah, I thought that was very curious. I would not have thought of trying that.
Is that your question? I'm sorry, Rochelle.
Yes.
Yeah, so have you heard of this, Toby? That doesn't seem right.
Well, I haven't heard of, I don't know what the specifics are of your driving situation and your ages and so forth, but that doesn't surprise me that, that having one driver as a primary could save you money. It's that's the beauty of running the numbers and doing a lot of different permutations. It also may have to do with who's driving which car. A lot of times when teenagers are added to a policy, the agents will sort of move around who's the primary driver of which car, because that also can have an impact. So congratulations to you. That's really great. What's also interesting in general is that we found that just getting married can save you money. We found that two people in their 30s who marry and combine policies can save an average of about $525 a year compared with what they would pay as singles. So it's a marriage benefit.
Well, that is interesting. Let's say it's just Rochelle and her new husband. And she drives the Ford and he drives the Jeep. I don't know. And for whatever reason, if they put one as primary, it's a lot less money. I guess I just don't understand why that would be. If that's the situation.
It could be a combination of the driving record of each driver. It probably has a lot to do with the car itself, how many miles are being driven on each car. Typically you want to put the car that's the most expensive to insure. You want to have that with the lease miles. You want to combine lease miles with the most expensive car, because the lower the mileage, the less you're going to pay. It's not always possible to do that, but there's just a lot of different ways that things can be combined.
I guess I never, in my situation, my husband and I thought we just, we're a married couple, but we just paid an insurance rate based on our driving record and our vehicle, and that there wasn't, I don't recall, a primary, secondary thing going on there. So.
Yeah, check with your mm-hmm. insurer. You may. I'm certain that one person is considered primary. Yes, that is common.
Yeah.
And check with your agent to see if there's a better way to do it. They're very open to, to moving things around to save you money, as long as it's legal.
Thank you, Rochelle. Jack in Madison has been waiting. Hi, Jack. What's your question?
I kind of had a comment and question just in regards to the recommendation of coverage. I'll start out by saying I'm an agent for a large insurance company, so I have a lot of experience with this, but hearing that the recommendation was 100, 300 for liability coverage just kind of made me cringe a little bit, just because I guess what I always tell people, the reason we carry insurance is for worst case scenario. In worst case scenario, if you get into an accident and cause the death of somebody, those lawsuits can be $300 to $500, all the way up to millions of dollars worth of a lawsuit. And with that 100, 300 coverage, I always just fear that you are wildly undercovered. I often insure people with higher net values, closer to retirement age, that sort of thing, upwards of $1 million on their auto insurance, sometimes all the way up to $2, $3, $4 million of coverage on their auto policy. So my question, I guess, was in the event of a death in a car accident, does your guest really truly believe 100, 300 is enough, or does she recommend higher coverage, including umbrella policies, for an additional $1 million of coverage? For clients who, A, can afford it, and, B, really need to protect themselves because of them being higher, worth more money, more cash, closer to retirement age, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Toby?
Hi. I would agree with you. I'm not going to contradict you. We do say that, consider adding liability protection, especially with an umbrella policy, because adding a $1 million policy, which is typically on top of the coverage, the limits that you already have, that can cost you, it's a minimal amount of money. It's $200 to $400 a year, depending on where you live. I mean, that's sort of what we found, throughout the country. So yeah, no, I totally agree. I mean, what we were recommending is sort of a generalized coverage. I don't know about, it's interesting what you say about covering people at retirement age, at higher limits, and is that because this is a way to protect their
retirement savings?
Their retirement accounts. My understanding is that your retirement account can't be touched in a liability lawsuit. I could be wrong about that, but I think there are certain accounts that can't be touched. So I'm interested in your listener's perspective on that.
Well, let me just see if the listener is still there. Jack, are you still there?
Yeah.
Yeah, so why the umbrella for people near retirement age?
It's true, yeah, there are certain accounts that can't be touched in a liability lawsuit, but if somebody's at retirement age, they still have a lot of money in other accounts that can be touched if they have cash laying around, as well as equity in their home, that type of thing. If they're sued for, $1 million and they have low coverage, they're going to have to come up with money one way or the other. And what we don't want to see is somebody having to come out of retirement due to being underinsured on their auto insurance and being in a crash where
they
injure somebody or, God forbid, kill somebody.
Yeah. And, Jack, how much more is somebody paying for that higher liability coverage or that umbrella policy if they're doing that?
Sure. So to start out, you know, so let's say somebody had 100, 300. The next step up is 250, 500. So it's over twice the coverage. Obviously, it depends on the person you guys have talked about. It's very different between each individual. But
yeah, let's say it's the same person. You know,
let's say it's the average person. I'm just going to say it's very inexpensive to double the coverage. It's not double the price. It could be $80 more a year, anywhere a little bit more, a little bit less than that, just depending on the person and their credit and all that sort of thing. And then those $1 million liability umbrellas, those can be anywhere from 80 to a couple $100 if somebody has a lot of cars, a couple houses, a large insurance portfolio. Umbrellas can be really expensive, but for your average two-car homeowner, an umbrella is usually only a couple $100 for the extra $1 million of coverage.
If I might add, the other thing about umbrella is that there are other kinds of liability coverages that it includes, such as libel, you know, various things that aren't covered under the auto liability. So that is the benefit of getting umbrella liability. It's a wider coverage.
Adam in Watertown is with us now. Hi, Adam.
Hi. My wife and I have a vehicle that we've had for 17 years, and it still does, still works well. However, we've been having some expenses come up with repair. And so one of the questions that we had was, well, at what point do we, you know, are the repairs becoming more than the value of the vehicle and we should just ditch it all and get a loan for a new car? Do you have any thoughts on that or any calculations that could help?
Hi, Tony. What do you think?
Yeah, don't have a number for you to use. You know, that's going to be an individual choice that's going to depend upon numerous things. Of course, how much savings you have, what position you're in financially. If you're going to get rid of that car and replace it with something else, how much can you afford? So you need to do that kind of calculation. You know, if you don't, because it may really make sense to chuck that vehicle and perhaps get a used one if you can't afford a new vehicle, but it's really a personal call, and you need to try to kind of figure out what's best for you in that situation.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think we have time for another call, even though we have many. Boy, this has been a popular hour. Let me ask you both just to leave us listeners with a takeaway when it comes to Toby, the insurance policies or insurance rates that we pay.
Yes, thank you. It's really been a pleasure. Thanks for having us. I would just say that the main takeaway is what we started with, that really try shopping every couple of years. You might be surprised at what you find. Policies change. Your characteristics may change. Different things happen in your life that can have an impact. And so every once in a while, shop around, and you may be surprised at what you find with auto coverage. And, you know, shop for homeowners, too. You may find that bundling the policies gives you an even better rate for both policies.
And how about you, Tony, a takeaway for listeners when it comes to the car financing and other aspects?
Well, you know, about approaching 90% now with the percentage of cars that are actually have financing, new cars with financing, with 68-month loans, we are getting to the point where we're almost having to mortgage our lives to buy a car these days. We need to be smarter than that. We need to put the money aside to try and reduce the amount of these loans and not get ourselves into a long-term hock to get a car. You know, put money aside, buy reliable cars, take care of them, try to stay away from leasing, and go with as short a loan as possible.
Will do. Thank you both very much for being with us. I'm Joy Cardine. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network.